speak.
Psalm 98, continuing the theme of the kingship of Yahweh, celebrating the reign of God, and I suggest, and I can only suggest, perhaps composed after the restoration of Judah, Babylon, after the Babylonian exile. There are hints in there that make one think that, but it's only a hint. God is returning to his city for all the world to see, to inaugurate his universal reign. By the way, it's the only one of these seven psalms from 93 to 99 that has a title at the front of it. Most psalms have a title, and I rarely do it with you because it's complex. But this one does have one, and it's called is a psalm. That's the title. Verse 1, sing to Yahweh a new song, for he has done marvelous deeds. His right hand and his holy arm have achieved victory. We've seen that a fair bit even just this morning. But I'll read Exodus 34. I hereby make a covenant before all people. I will perform marvels, such as have not been performed in all the earth or in any nation. And all the people among whom you live shall see the work of Yahweh, for it is an awesome thing that I do with you. Some of that language picked up in this psalm. Or maybe the psalm is older than the language of Exodus, but they at least are related. Verse 2. Yahweh has made known his salvation. He has revealed his justice in the sight of the nations. He has remembered his kindness and faithfulness to the house of Israel. All the ends of the earth have seen the salvation of our God. Yahweh came to the help of Israel and achieved victory by his own power, and because of his faithful love for Israel, has revealed to the whole world his justice. And that's what makes me think it's got something to do with this extraordinary, unbelievable return of the Jews from Judah back to Judah after the exile. And they see this as the whole world looking at this and thinking, wow, this God must be powerful and wonderful and awesome. Shout for joy to Yahweh, all the earth. Break forth into joyous song and sing praises. And there it goes through some of the instruments that they used in the temple worship. Sing praises to Yahweh with the lyre. With the lyre and the sound of instruments. With trumpets and the sound of the horn. Shout with joy before the King Yahweh. And in the first book of Kings, chapter 1, we've got a similar reference to the instruments that they used in their acclamations. The priest Zadok, which is possibly the origin of the word Sadducees. Sadducees are likely that they are the descendants of the priest, one of David's priests, Zadok. Zadukes, you can see S-Z related there. That's a likely origin of the word. The priest Zadok took the horn of oil from the tent and anointed Solomon. Then they blew the trumpet and all the people said, long live King Solomon. And all the people went up following him, playing on pipes and rejoicing with great joy, so that the earth quaked at the noise. Psalm 92. It's good to give thanks to Yahweh, to sing praises to your name, O Most High, to declare your steadfast love in the morning and your faithfulness by night, to the music of the lute and the harp and the melody of the lyre. And you could find plenty of other examples of the use of instruments in the Bible. Perhaps a lovely one, I won't read it to you now, but it's the very last psalm, Psalm 150, which closes the whole of the psalmody, and it's all about singing with joy and all the instruments that they used in praising God. So back to our psalm. Verse 7. Let the sea roar and all that fills it, the world and those who live in it. Let the rivers clap their hands. It's nice. Let the hills sing together for joy at the presence of Yahweh, for he's coming to judge the earth. He will judge the world with justice and the peoples with equity. God's victory, as the psalmist sees it, reveals God's justice and is in view of establishing justice on the earth. Second book of Samuel, chapter 23 reads, "The God of Israel has spoken, the Rock of Israel has said to me, one who rules over people justly, ruling in the fear of God, is like the light of morning, like the sun rising on a cloudless morning, gleaming from the rain on the grassy land." So the author got carried away with a little bit of poetry. Probably a lovely morning like we had this morning. Lovely. Isaiah 62. "Yah, for Zion's sake I will not keep silent, and for Jerusalem's sake I will not rest, until her vindication shines out like the dawn, and her salvation like a burning torch." Verse 9, Yahweh is coming to judge the earth. Christians in the New Testament literature, which of course you realize well, and there's a few references there to Revelation, but I won't go through them, long for the coming of Christ. In the canon of the Mass, we're saying, "until he comes," you know, it's Paul's quote about the Mass. The Eucharist is "until he comes," when the final banquet. So, he came to save us in incarnation, of course, and he's coming to judge and reward us. And I find this one of the most enlightening and simple understandings of the coming of the Lord. It's a sermon, you find it everywhere, but it's Sermon 5 on Advent by St. Bernard. So St. Bernard is the 12th century. And he writes, "We know of a threefold coming of the Lord. In the first coming, he came in the weakness of human nature. In the intermediate coming, he comes in the power of the Spirit. And in the final coming, he will come in the majesty of glory. Therefore, this intermediate coming," which is the main one for us, the one that's happening now, "this intermediate coming is, as it were, a way of connecting the first coming," the incarnation, "to the final coming. In the first coming, Christ was our Redeemer. In the final coming, he will reveal himself as our life. In this present coming," the coming that happens during the Eucharist every time we go to Mass, the coming that happens whenever we give a cup of cold water to someone in his name, the coming through the poor, the coming, you know, all the comings of as Christ, we mediate through each other. "In this present coming, he is our rest and our consolation." It's quite nice, isn't it? From the great Saint Bernard. So we'll reflect on the reign of Christ, who said, "I have overcome the world." We think of Jesus' resurrection and the fruits of Christ's victory for the blessed. And I'm reading from Revelations chapter 15 now. "They sing the song of Moses," the song of victory as they crossed the Red Sea. "The servant of God, the song of the Lamb," and this is the song, "Great and amazing are your deeds, Lord God the Almighty. Just and true are your ways, King of the nations." And again from the book of Revelation, "I heard a voice from heaven like the sound of many waters and like the sound of loud thunder. The voice I heard was like the sound of harpists playing on their harps, and they sing a new song before the throne and before the four living creatures and before the elders. No one could learn that song except the 144,000 who've been redeemed from the earth. 144 is 12 by 12, isn't it? 1,000 is the biggest number. This is the 12 tribes of Israel, the 12 apostles multiplied, and then by 1,000. It's not a numerical thing, it's a symbolic number of the most great significance of the Old and New Testament reaching out to the whole, to embrace the whole world. In spite of those groups of people that will tell you that there are 144,000 people saved and not 144,000 plus one, you know. Isaiah 11, the root of Jesse shall come, the one who rises to rule the Gentiles. In him the Gentiles shall hope. One of the many texts that Paul in Romans quotes to let people know that Judaism is meant to be universal, it's meant to be Catholic. And that it's Jesus who showed us this. So if we're going to be true to Judaism, we have to be universal people who embrace the whole of the world and let go our cultic and culturally specific Jewish practices.